This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. I was deep in Western New York for the July 4th holiday, had loads of fun, the weather was mostly great. The one sour note was not being able to find Wimbledon on the available television channels. We searched for Wimbledon and found live coverage instead of the Tour de France. In addition to having no interest in watching the race, I realized that I had no idea how to watch it. I'm not alone, apparently. Each year when the spotlight turns again to spandex, millions of Americans shrug and say, meh. Not so for NHPR's education and environment reporter Sam Evans-Brown, an avid tour watcher who has a track record, apparently, for converting lukewarm Tour de France watchers into enthusiasts. Sam, thanks for stopping in.
Anytime.
So sell me on why I'd want to watch the Tour de France.
Well, of course, you know, I can't sell anyone who doesn't actively want to watch it. But if you happen to find yourself in front of it, I'd say that the big reasons to watch the Tour de France is really that it's not just one race. There's the yellow jersey, which everyone knows. That's the guy who's winning the race.
Right.
But also there's the green jersey, often known as the sprinter's jersey. You've got the polka dot jersey. That's the guy who's getting to the top of the mountains the fastest. And you've got the white jersey, which is the best young rider. So these are the various jerseys. You've got the various stages. You've got the various different kinds of stages. And all of these things, once you learn to see them and learn to know what you're looking at, can be really, really fun to watch.
So, Sam, I'm not even clear on whether you're cheering for a team or for an individual.
So I think the best way to understand this is to know what the motivations behind each team and each rider are. So each team has their best rider, which they see as their best chance to win a stage or to win one of those jerseys.
And these teams are geographically based, like the Australian team,
Not at all. The teams are entirely based on money. They have a sponsor. The sponsor says, we want our name to be on as many television screens as possible, so we're going to put together sort of an all-star cast of whoever can do that the best. You know, for instance, Ted King, our rider from New Hampshire, was on a team full of Italians and Slovakians. They were trying to win the sprinter's jersey, the green jersey. They had a very good sprinter who had a really good shot at this, so they built an entire team around just trying to do that.
It's even hard for me to understand the formation, like how they ride, what kind of shapes they're in. And, you know, I mean, I'm used to the sort of like marathon or the horse race where one is pulling ahead and, you know, breaks its chest triumphantly against the ribbon.
So to understand this, you have to know that the draft is incredibly important in bike racing. And you'll hear this occasionally. People will say, oh, you know, drafting is important. But until you've actually been in a pack, it's very difficult to understand. You can be going at a pace that would be impossible for you to ride by yourself, and it will take almost no effort if you're in a pack. So once you understand that, you start to see that whoever's in the front of the pack is
basically breaking the wind and creating draft for...
They're breaking the wind, but not only that, that's a deliberate decision. I'm going to go to the front of the pack. I'm going to sacrifice myself for this moment for my team, for my lead racer.
That must be hard sort of politicking on a team, right? You know, you've got to figure out who's going to be the star.
And the only way to be the star is to win other races. So the whole rest of the year, they're sort of sorting this out. Who's going to be the lead rider? Who's going to, you know, what kind of team are we going to form? And they figure out their strategy and then they go with it.
To my mind, I turn on this race. These guys are just riding forever and ever together. Why not just tune in for the last 500 meters?
Well, and certainly lots of people do that for the sprint stages. But if you were interested in the dynamics of the race and who's chasing the breakaway down and which teams are doing the work and who is really vested in getting that stage win, then you could watch, you know, you could turn it on every 5 or 10 minutes or so just to check up on the action.
So now you've schooled me about drafts and being out of the wind and how teams plan their attack. But are there any other sort of elements of strategy that I should be watching for?
Very frequently, cycling is a bit predictable. You know, on the flat stages, we know
right,
that it's going to be a sprint.
Right, you're going to go fast, yeah.
Right, on the mountains, we're going to see sort of carnage as the, you know, the strongest man just peels the skins off of the other ones and rips their legs off, sure. But there are very exciting moments where even if you're a veteran cyclist, enthusiast, watcher of races, things will happen that you just don't expect. There was one of those on stage 13 of this year, and I want to show you that moment.
It's hard to understand what it's like when you get a crosswind. You've got to shelter from the wind at 45 degrees to the rider in front of you. But if you're not right on that wheel, if you're not at 45 degrees, you just get popped out of the back.
And even though this was a flat stage, the group was broken up a lot. And the reason for that was it was windy, and not just regular winds, but crosswinds. Mm-hmm. And the only way to protect from that is you form these echelons, this sort of diagonal line across the road. And you see what happens, about 7 riders back, a gap starts to form.
Uh-huh.
And it's a subtle thing, to the point where even the commentator didn't even really notice when it was happening. You know, a few seconds was all it took. These guys go to the front, they form their echelon, they ride as hard as they can, you get that separation. And look, there you go. Yellow jersey has been dropped.
All of a sudden, two teams, Omega Pharma, Quickstep and Belkin, put the hammer down once again. And look what damage is being done. It's a minute and 40 seconds back to this second group on the road.
So I think what's important to remember is that this is a three-week-long race. So no one can go out and race every day as hard as they can. Each team and each rider, they're really picking their days. They're going to decide the days in which they're going to exert maximum effort. And the other days, they're going to be trying to do as little as possible. So as you watch the Tour de France, remember that. Most of the time, the peloton, the pack, is not racing every day. They're out for a group ride, and then occasionally they'll have a real day of effort.
Huh, okay, Sam, this is becoming a lot more interesting to me. But let me ask you, after knowing, you know, how much money is behind all this and all the doping, one could tend to get cynical. What keeps you watching the Tour de France?
Well, for me personally, I think that understanding what's going on and the motivations behind each rider make it all the more interesting. If you just go and it's a race and everyone's going to pedal as hard as they can and one of them's going to get there first, I think that's pretty boring. But when you get this little window into their psyche, I think it makes it a lot more fun to watch.
Okay, so if I want to be really, really interesting at the next dinner party when the Tour de France comes up, what do I talk about?
So it's not very fashionable right now to like Chris Froome because he's winning by so much. We're not sure if he's doping. But between the next five racers back, there's only a minute and a half separating them. And one of them is this guy, Nairo Quintana, who's from Colombia. He's this little, you know, he's a young rider. He's very small. He weighs something on the order of 120 pounds. Very good in the mountains. You know, rags to riches. His parents bought him a secondhand mountain bike, and that's how he got into cycling. And it's very fashionable to like Nairo Quintana right now. So you can mention him. He's in sixth place. We're hoping he's going to get onto the podium.
I like him already.
I'm glad I could inform your dinner parties.
Sam Evans-Brown, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Virginia.